Chapter 6. The King of Ghosts. Sir Simon had not forgotten the Otises, however. He had chosen Friday, 14th of August, for his master plan. And what a plan it was! His first victim was to be Master Washington Otis. He'd had quite enough of him and his pots clean away. He would loom over the silly boy from the end of his bed, his arms outstretched while making a noise like gnashing teeth. Genius. After putting this foolish young man into a state of quivering terror, he'd go to victims 2 and 3. His plan for Mr. and Mrs. Otis was to place a clammy claw on Mrs. Otis's forehead while hissing evil tales of long-dead villains in her husband's ear. Next would be those hateful twins. They deserved a good lesson, the very best he could do. He would creep between their beds, icy green and gruesome, and wake them with a fiendish cackle. Then they would watch terror-struck as he threw off his cloak and crawled around the room, one eyeball glaring horribly and his bones shining white in the moonlight. Virginia, he did not have a lot against, as she hadn't caused him much trouble. He settled on a few hollow groans from the cupboard, and maybe just a little icy wind and twitching of curtains. Finally, just to show off, he decided to have some fun with the housekeeper, Mrs. Umney. He settled on an old favourite, the flying chamber pot. He giggled to himself at the idea. He chose his outfit with great care. 1, a large black hat with a red plume. 2, clammy, rotting shirt frilled at wrists and neck. 3, a rusty dagger. The night was perfect. A violent storm came on, and the wind was so fierce it rattled every door and window. The old house shook on its foundations. At 10:30, the family went to bed. At first, the twins kept Sir Simon waiting by giggling and shrieking. But when midnight rang out on the hall clock, all was silent except for a screech owl in the old yew tree and the wind moaning around the house. Above the wind and rain came the heavy snoring of Mr. Otis. The whole family was fast asleep. Sir Simon oozed himself out of the panelling, smiling his most horrible smile. He made his way down the hall, scattering the shadows as he went. The Canterville ghost was back. And how? A few waves of his rusty dagger, and he felt like the King of Ghosts, the Emperor of Spooks. He stopped outside Washington's room. The wind blew his straggly grey hair about his head. His moth-eaten clothes rustled, all mouldy and clammy. It was time. He put his claw upon the doorknob. Then something made him turn. Horror of horrors, he fell back, covering his face, daring only to peek out quickly behind his fingers. In the hall, in front of him, stood a monstrous thing. Its head was bald and shining, its face pale, its mouth twisted in a horrible grin. Around its neck hung a placard, where some awful words were written, who knows what, and in its left hand it waved a gleaming sword. A rival ghost! Sir Simon had never seen another ghost before. He was terrified. This ghost had it in for him, he was sure of that. Whatever terrible message was written on that placard, it was meant for the Canterville ghost. He tore down the hall, dropping his dagger in one of Mr. Otis's boots. Stumbling up the stairs, he whisked through the panelling and landed with a bump on the other side. Then he lay there, stunned, trying to work out what had happened. He had terrorised this house for no first-class British haunting, then they didn't deserve it. And that Washington and his cleaning habits, odd in such a young man. Peculiar, even. This family were not worth haunting. There was also something they could never know or hope to understand. It was the ghost's charter. This was something Sir Simon took very seriously. He had to haunt at least once a week, as well as doing chain-rattling duty once a month. There was no way he could escape these duties